Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 288 of the Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. Stephen Bradley here once again, sitting in for Matthew Wade, who, good news, hopefully, maybe, fingers crossed, will be back next week. He's on basically paternity leave, looking after his little child. And frankly, I feel a little bit envious right now because he gets to sit at home and not get any sleep because he's got a child to look after, whereas all the rest of us didn't get any sleep because we had to watch Arsenal play Villarreal. I don't know if that's the cure for not getting able to sleep. I don't know whether you'd want to execute people by making them watch it and making them confess to crimes they'd never commit just to make sure they didn't have to watch the first 75 minutes again. I don't know, but joining me to discuss one of the most enjoyable 90 minutes of Arsenal football history is Anita Sambal. Anita, how are you, ma'am?
Hello, Stephen. I always have the pleasure to comment on the really bad weeks.
Are bars opening Croatia right now?
Yes, they are. The outside, yeah.
Right, but still, that's better than Ireland. Like today's the first day in 4 months I was able to get a haircut, which is fantastic. Oh. But you were able to drink legally while this game was on. And I have no idea how you're standing now, 4 days later, frankly, because if I had been given the opportunity to drink during that game in an establishment of regard, never mind disregard, my blood alcohol level would now be at a dangerously low level.
Well, the weather in Croatia last week was pretty much like Ireland and UK. Pretty cold. I had to actually turn on the heating, so it wasn't really pleasant to drink outside. But yeah, it would definitely be helpful.
I mean, someone should have turned the heating on. Maybe the undersoil heating might have quickened up the players a bit. We jest, listener, okay? We don't take things too seriously at the best of times, but that Villarreal performance, though, that 90 minutes, maybe apart from Aubameyang, I don't know if I've ever come away from an Arsenal game less enthused about a team wearing red and white. I don't know if I've come away from an Arsenal performance thinking, good God, they're bad. Because it wasn't just the result, it was the manner of the result. They were leggy, they were... I don't even want to say they were exhausted because everyone's dealing with this. And we saw Manchester City and Chelsea play two far better teams than Villarreal and just completely overrun them. They were insanely good. And the whole point of bringing in Mikel Arteta is to try and play like that. And to see...
How many times we did play like that?
I mean, they kind of did in the FA Cup run for Spurs. But if you go back and watch the City goals that Arsenal scored against them, it was knocking it around 10 yards out from their own goal, waiting for the press to come, breaking the press, getting it out wide, crossing in and scoring, and not a bother on them. And it's like, where's that gone? Like, at no stage did they look like they were ever going to get anywhere near that level of play against a competently coached Villarreal side. Like Unai Emery scouted that team perfectly. He knew where the ball was going to go. He knew how to set up against them. And he said, right, I dare them to have a plan B. They didn't.
No.
That's the frustrating thing.
I mean, we wouldn't score if the match was going on for another 90 minutes.
Yeah. Like, if it was going on right now, I would not have to break into this recording to bring you a goal flash.
I mean, Arteta was full of bad luck. Aubameyang did hit the post and all that. We did have some kind of, half chances. If that went in, things would be different and et cetera, what the excuses that he likes to bring up after bad performances. But I mean, it's still a fact that we had, four shots on target during those?
Two.
I mean, during those two matches.
Oh, four, yeah.
Four, yeah.
And one of them was a penalty.
I agree with your comment that they all look tired and leggy, which is, I mean, it was just really frustrating to watch. As you said, you would be okay. We lost, we drew, whatever. It wasn't our night or something like that. If the players looked like they were, trying to do something, like they were actually, motivated to win, because they all looked, starting with Arteta and all the players, they all looked like, oh, we just don't want to lose, not that we want to win.
It's risk and gambling. And this team was like, I don't like accusing professionals of not wanting to win or not looking like they're wanting to win, just purely because I know they do. Like they are people too. And yes, they're, you know, hugely compensated no matter whether they win or lose. And obviously they'll have bonus payments and et cetera. But very rarely will you get a performance where you can clearly see that someone isn't trying to win. Yeah. And I'm not saying that this team wasn't trying to win. It's just that there was no urgency. There didn't seem to be no panic. There was no sense of, oh shit, we need to score. Yeah. It was very passive. It was very comfortable. It was very...
My commentator said patient.
Yeah, but too
Arsenal
patient.
Are being patient. I mean, why are you being patient? Literally, it's your biggest match of the year. If you lose, you go out. If you draw, you go out. The only way is to go forward, to try to score and turn the result around.
Mm.
And
you have a team that relies on transition football a lot to create chances. Like, this team is at its best when it runs. Like when it's got Saka on the ball, Smith Rowe running off it, Pepe stretching the ball out wide, and either Aubameyang or Lacazette, depending on your choice, making runs behind, and then Partey, and if Ceballos is playing, Ceballos knocking balls over the top, and then David Luiz and Xhaka doing the same. Mm-hmm. That's the game plan. Like, you need runners. You need them to run as fast and as often as possible to make sure that the defense gets stretched out and gives everyone else a bit of pace, a bit of time and space. But they didn't. They did what City do. What City do is they just pass the ball around you and they wait for the perfect chance. They wait for the perfect opportunity to get behind you, smack the ball across the goal and score a tap-in. Like, that's what they do. But that seems like what Arteta's trying to do. But newsflash, and maybe this is just me, but we're not as good as Manchester City. You know, like, look, I would really like, look, if Saka, Smith Rowe, Martinelli, et cetera, if they stay at the club for 3 years, yes, they're going to be exceptional, but there's half a chance they won't be as good as Foden, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Riyad Mahrez as a front four, because that might be, when it's on form, the best front four in the world.
Yeah.
And to expect our youngsters to play like, when we say world class, like, oh my God, he's worked. Properly world-class players like Kevin De Bruyne, who would walk into our team and walk into any team in the world, to expect Smith Rowe to play like Kevin De Bruyne is fantasy world. You know, if he gets anywhere close to that, I'll be over the moon. But for that system to work, for Manchester City's system to work, it requires near perfection. And it's why every year Pep looks at his team and goes, right, nope, he's not good enough, spend 60 million on a replacement. Aymeric Laporte, a player who strolls into Arsenal's backline, can't get a game because they spent another 60 million on Ruben Diaz. Like, that's the level that City are operating at. They need perfection for Pep's system to work. And Arteta is playing a very similar system, requiring very similar decision-making and very, very similar passing movements.
Because that's what he learned from.
That's what he learns. And he knows it works.
Yeah.
So he's reticent to change it, but he doesn't have the players to play it. And when it becomes clear, like it did after 5 minutes against Villarreal, that Unai Emery had put three men on the wings, basically, because he knew we wanted to pass the ball either side. Mm. As soon as that became perfectly clear that we couldn't do it, it was then up to Arteta to come up with a plan B. And did he?
No.
No.
Like we mentioned so many times, the in-game management, the substitutions, I mean, let's not even start on the substitutions when they came on. And then you think, now, oh, yes, now he will go and do some subs. And then he takes off the only player on the pitch that could probably score a goal when he is in a good or half decent position.
Yep.
Yes, I know Aubameyang suffered in last month really a lot with the malaria and lost the weight and everything has been happening. But if he played for 80 minutes, surely he can be there for like 10 more minutes.
Even if he can't run, he's
Yeah, he can just be in the right position. Yeah, yeah.
You are with Lacazette, one of the two best finishers at the club. Mm. Just just stand there, stand exactly on Raul Albiol's shoulder and just be a threat. And even if you only make one run, that'll do. That way he has to account for you. And then bring on Lacazette for, you know, Kieran Tierney. And then push Saka to left back. And even if Aubameyang goes left wing and just makes one run at the right back. Like, these are things that this mug here, me, is thinking mm-hmm. of. Like, with Aubameyang, you have to leave him on. Even if he doesn't score.
I thought that, and I have, like, zero knowledge of tactics or anything.
Like, it's silly, simple stuff like that he's getting wrong. And it's galaxy brain stuff that he's getting right. Yeah. And that's the problem. Like, it's like Pepe. I said it after he scored a screamer against West Brom on Sunday. It's like he's Arteta's version of Walcott or Oxlade-Chamberlain. He'll have one really good game, three bang average one games, and one total stinker. And as soon as you think, okay, as soon as he has a really good game, you think, right, okay, that's the Pepe we need. That's the Pepe we absolutely spent 70 million on. That's that's the match winner. That's the man who can pull a goal out of his arse and save us.
Yeah, there were comments like that after the weekend.
And then you won't see him again for a month.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you go, right, okay, he hasn't turned up for a month. Maybe we can start thinking about replacing him. Maybe it's not in him. Maybe we need to start thinking about bringing in a replacement. Oh, he scored. Oh, wow. Oh, believe me. One in from 30 yards again. And that's, you know, this Arsenal team needs consistency. And that's why Saka and, yes, Smith Rowe got his first goal against West Brom. And is that enough for a man who's going to be playing number 10? Probably not. But again, I can forgive it for him because he's learning. Yeah. You know, like it's one of those situations where I'm willing to give Saka and Smith Rowe time because they've only been in the team for 4 months.
Yeah.
But like I said, that coming away from that Villarreal performance just left me disenchanted a little bit. Like it left me thinking, I'm not Arteta out, but if someone was to come up to me and say, I absolutely think that Arteta should go, I can't really blame them. Yeah. I don't think this season is something that he can nail his colours to and say, oh yeah, this is the best I could have done, because it's not. And if you are of the opinion that the last thing Arsenal should be doing is raiding the war chest and giving it to Arteta and Edu, two people who are learning the job on the fly, and you're like, no, we need an experienced pair of hands here. We need someone who knows what he's doing, that has a track record of bringing a club up, of restocking the squad with young players, some with resale value, some with talent that you want to keep in the team, and go from there.
That's much to argue.
No. You know, like any argument I make that says that Arteta and Edu should stay is based on pure faith.
Mm.
And
true, yeah. The pros and cons list, it's more, at the moment, it's more cons for against Arteta than pros.
Well, it depends how much of a pro winning the FA Cup is. And it should be. I mean, look, Tottenham fans would absolutely would scream.
I thought of Tottenham as well.
Yeah. But Tottenham are having a better season than Arsenal right now.
Yeah.
They sacked the manager.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's very weird where Arsenal are right now, because they have a squad full of Champions League players. They're not playing like Champions League players, but they're Champions League players. And they're on Champions League money. And we don't even have Europa League money next year. And we're all talking about who we want to sell, who we want to keep. It's going to come out pretty quickly that there are players that are going to say, I don't want to be here. I came here to play Champions League football. I came here because I want to be at a club that's at the top of the top. I came here because I want longevity and I want to be able to, you know, earn a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. Are Arsenal in a position to go? God forbid it doesn't happen, but what if Kieran Tierney comes out and says, look, I have 2 years left in my contract. I want help.
Yeah. You know, there's not much you can say.
Such as?
Can you force him to stay?
I mean, because, you could try and talk him into it, but you'd have to talk. But you'd have to talk him into it.
Yeah.
We're assuming that these players, like, oh yeah, William Saliba, yeah, he'll come walking back into the side. Will he? Will he? Is playing for Arsenal right now a draw? I don't mean as in like no one will ever want to play for Arsenal again, because Arsenal are still one of the 10 biggest clubs in the world right now, and they can still pay big money. Like, they will always have that. It's why Tottenham building the new stadium was crucial for them, because maybe they'll never have the cachet of quote unquote being a big club in the same way that Arsenal do now, just because of the trophies won and et cetera. But they will always have the money. They will always be able to go to any manager that almost they want, and pretty much almost any player they want, and go, look, we can afford you. We can pay you a lot more than pretty much anyone else in the world. And that will always carry.
And London. Now,
and London, you know, the greatest city in the world.
That has been really a big influence in the past.
Yeah. Like, Arsenal will always be an easy sell, but we're rapidly getting to the point where the market where we want to buy in is full of clubs like us. The Liverpools, the Man Cities, the Tottenhams, the Chelseas. And they're all looking for the same players we're looking for now. And can we outbid them? Like, that's the problem, Arsenal. Without the European money. And can we afford as many as we want to rebuild the squad? And this is where I feel a little bit sympathetic towards Arteta, because the job he's being asked to do is monumental. It is literally rebuild the club from scratch. And the competition he's doing against has never been harder in the history of the Premier League. We're asking him to make Arsenal title challengers next year, but in 2, 3, 4 years, to build the club back to where we think they should be. Not winners, because no one expects anything, but at least be challenging. At least have 4 games to go, be in that graphic that says race for the title. That'll do. Just give us a puncher's chance. He's got to beat Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Thomas Tuchel, whoever Tottenham hires. What do you do?
Money behind them.
Yeah. And they're all spending more on wages now than us.
As these smaller clubs were beginning to, not have, one fluke season when they are good, they are looking good, but they keep every season doing a lot better and buying more expensive players and building teams like Leicester, Everton, now West Ham, for example. I mean, it's a really, really tough situation for him. It would be tough for a manager with a lot of experience, let alone for someone with such a little experience, and with addition of unexperienced people in the board as well,
and
trying to help him.
Leicester's the perfect example, right? Arsenal buy Saliba, Leicester buy Fofana, both centre-backs playing for Saint-Étienne. We send Saliba out on loan. Fofana is maybe Leicester's best player, at least definitely their best defender this year. And that's in a team that has Soyuncu, who was their best defender last year. You know, Leicester buy Youri Tielemans. How did Leicester get Youri Tielemans? It's stuff like that. Harvey Barnes coming through. How did Leicester have Harvey Barnes? Ricardo Pereira. Leicester's full of really, really good players, and everyone's giving Brendan Rodgers, he's got them up to third. Look at their team. Kasper Schmeichel walks into our side. Pereira as a right back walks into our side. Wilfred Ndidi walks into our side. Jamie Vardy, we tried to buy 4 years ago. they've bought really, really well. West Ham, Suchek from Slavia Prague, Kufal from Slavia Prague. Really good.
Who would expect it? They're just there. They keep winning their matches.
Everton buying Alan from Napoli for 20 million. Those are the buys that Arsenal need to be making. Those are the players that Arsenal should be getting ahead of and getting a card. No, don't be worrying about the Camavingas and the Bellinghams and trying to buy the flash player. Arsenal need to build from the ground up.
Yeah.
And that's where sacking all their scouts at the, you know, the start of last season, and Edu was saying, but I'll rely on my contacts. And now, according to the Guardian, we're out hiring scouts again. Like, we've got two people learning this job on the fly that are playing Football Manager as they go along, and there's no reset button. You know, if you sell Willock, Mainsley Niles, Nketiah, and anyone else you can, and raise money, and then, you know, Stan Kroenke comes in and goes, oh yeah, I'm trying to protect the investment of my club here. Here's 100 million. And they spend it on, you know, jack shit. And it doesn't work. Like, the next manager has to come in and then sell all that for half the money, and then he's got to go to Kroenke and get money out of him. And look, good.
Yeah, you have to think now this summer. I mean, besides the fact that we are without the Europe and the competition and all of that, it's still just like the last summer. It's still a tough situation in the football in general with the lack of revenue from match days and all of that. And plus, there is a European Championship as well happening, so lots of players will be tied up there and not thinking about their futures until late in the transfer window. But I mean, you still have to think about, okay, yeah, I doubt that they will sack Arteta at the moment. I think they will definitely give him a bit more time, but there is a reality that he won't be here November, December if things go bad. You have to think about buying and building team then buying players for beyond Arteta that will fit with the players that you stick with, and that will, as you said, help rebuild the team, not, you know, just to buy them now to have a good run or something like that for in the next season or so. It's a really difficult situation, and it's not filling me with confidence that we have people that are learning on the fly, making decisions.
And starting from August, you know, we're going to have fans in the last two Premier League games of the season, but all going well, stadiums should be at least half full, maybe three quarters of full by the time the start of the next season comes around. He will get no room for manoeuvre at all. Mm-mm, with the fans. No. If Arsenal turn up game one at the Emirates and are shit, the reception he's going to get is going to be unholy.
Yeah.
It's going to be off, like, it's there, they'll boo him out the stadium, like, there will be, and there will be no, you know, sense of, oh yeah, let's get behind the fans are gonna turn up first game of the season and expect, they're gonna say, right, okay, you've been given another chance, we're gonna give you another chance, okay, on you go, show us. Yeah, none of this, we've got faith in you. We're like, okay, we saw last season was a joke. We nearly finished below Leeds, like, you know, we were ninth in the league at, you know, 11th, 13th at places. Like, if the fans are going to turn up expecting stuff, and again, I can't blame them. They're going to want Arteta to justify the talk. They're going to want,
especially at home. I mean, what kind of record we have at home? It's ridiculous.
This year, what was it? 39 games at home, won 14, drawn 11, lost 14.
I mean,
since Arteta took over, like, it's appalling, and they haven't scored in four. They haven't scored in 13.
Yeah, something like that.
It's appalling, and Arsenal fans over the last 20 years. I don't want to say spoiled, because that's the wrong word, but it's almost true. Like,
it's close.
Like, we've been spoiled by Wenger ball. By the, like, everyone's looking at, you know, City playing and they're going, oh my God, go watch an Arsenal game from 2002 and go watch the numbers swarming forward. You know, go watch Ashley Cole playing left wing. And you're like, oh my God, Saka, isn't he great? Go watch Ashley Cole playing left wing. You know, with Perez playing inside left and Henri playing inside left, and those three players by themselves just cutting swathes through defenses because they don't know where to stand. Like we were playing like that 15, 16, 18 years ago. And that's obviously still fresh in the mind. And even right up to until the end, yes, Arsenal were losing, but they weren't losing 1-0. They were losing 3-2s and 3-1s. Like, they were losing whilst trying to attack. You know, the issue with Arsenal, Wenger's Arsenal, was never the side was boring. It was right at the end, the side can't defend for toffees.
Yeah, there was some, I love a few comments on Twitter after the Villarreal match. as you said, Wenger's side was losing, but he never went out to, you know, not lose. He always went out to win, and it didn't always work. It, you know, we all remember the 8-2s and stuff like that. But still, they always went out to win the match and not, you know, defensive and scared and worried about wrong passes or something like that. It's just something that has been happening with Arteta.
Yeah, but it's
at least since January.
It's little details. And when I mean little details, it's stuff like passing the ball to the wrong foot. Like the amount of times Granit Xhaka gets past the ball to his right foot is insane. No, and it's stuff like that that's the difference between top level sides and good footballers. You know, top footballers will make sure that the ball is presented to you in step all times. Like half the reason why Real Madrid couldn't pass the ball around Chelsea was because Thibaut Courtois was almost playing centre back. And they were trying to use him as a sweeper keeper. And every time he passed the ball to Casemiro, he hit it straight at him. And as soon as he hit it straight at him, Kante legged it at him. Because he knew, right, he has to turn. As soon as he turned, he's fucked. And he was right. Because you have to give Casemiro the ball either to one side or the other because he's not the quickest. But once he gets going, he's rapid. So you give him a little bit of a turn, you give him a half step, and off he goes. Xhaka is the same. Xhaka, you give him the ball on the left-hand side, the pitch opens up for him. He's a wonderful sprayer of footballs. You know, he can hit balls left, right, centre, wherever.
Yeah.
But you have to give him the ball on time so that he gives him time. If he goes to his right, takes him a second to control it, then look up, and then the defender that was out of position has now recovered. Yeah. That's the chance gone. And now he knows that, so he recycles it. And they go again. And that's the problem. Like, Arsenal are playing too safe. They're being too cautious. They're too unwilling not to deviate from the pattern that's been insisted that they play by the coach. And
that's exactly it.
When you've got an array of players like Partey, who is brilliant at coming up with through balls off the cuff, like Saka, who can beat a defender like anyone, like Smith-Rowe's biggest strength is his off-ball running. You know, he's not Aaron Ramsey, but he's the damn closest thing I've seen to him. You know, like in the sense of he just always runs off the ball. He's always in the box.
He might become Aaron Ramsey.
He might.
Next season.
But not under Arteta.
Mm.
But that's the problem. You know, like it's so frustrating to see so many players limited by a tactical plan that doesn't get the most out of them. You know,
Partey against Villarreal, what the hell was that?
That was a perfect example of playing a really good player in the wrong position.
He had to sit back and control the midfield by himself.
What is Thomas Partey good at? What's his best strength?
Moving the ball forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
There was a massive hole between him and...
Yeah. And that's the problem. Like, he's really good when he gets the ball into his feet and a midfielder or a defender presses on him and he beats him. He's very much like Santi Cazorla in that sense. Like, he can dribble past almost anyone in centre midfield and then drive forward, and then he's good at finding a ball. That's where you want him. Like, that when people say, oh, he's the next Patrick Vieira, that's what they mean.
Mm.
They mean someone who's in the middle of the park, who's strong enough to get the ball and then nimble enough to move past them and then go forward.
That's what we had when he first started playing more regularly. We were all like, I remember I was, it's just that simple. He gets the ball, he passes it forward. That's it.
Yeah.
That's because what we were missing. And it seems like he was just the perfect player for that position, for what
and
we were missing.
Who was he playing with at Old Trafford in centre mid?
Xhaka?
Nope.
Elneny.
Yep.
Elneny, yeah.
The lad who was doing all his defending.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the problem. Like, you need to play someone that, like, yes, Thomas Partey comes across as a defensive midfielder. He's not. He's not a defensive midfielder. Yeah. He's a good defender, but he's not a defensive midfielder. It's why Atletico Madrid let him go. It's why Rodri cost 60 and Thomas Partey cost 45. You know, like, it's... You know, he was brought in to play box to box, and then in their biggest game of the season, he was played defensive midfielder and told not to move. And you're like,
And that was the plan. I mean, Chaka got injured, and Arteta was like, "Oh, that messed with our plan and all of that." And still, the plan was the same.
Yeah. Okay, we'll just play Kieran Tierney as a immobile left back, and you're like, lads, Gabriel is there.
Yeah.
Like he's really good on the ball too. Just play him at left back. And then against West Brom, what do? They play Saka at left back, Gabriel as the left, and then they make Gabriel play, and you're like, have much
West
to put
Brom
up anymore.
But the more important match. Yeah. It's more important to relegate Big Sam than, you know, to go to European Cup final. It's stuff like that makes me, you know, lean on the side of not giving Arteta any more patience.
we have to bring it up. The team selection against West Brom, Anita Sambal, the floor is
Yeah, I was dreading the match. I mean, usually when the match is so late in the weekend, I'm like a nervous wreck whole weekend, you know, just waiting. When will it finally start? When will it finally end when it starts? And then now it was just like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll get through it. I'll have a nice weekend until then. And then the lineups came out. I was really hoping for and expecting and, you know, building up for, okay, we have absolutely nothing to play for in the remainder of the season. We have a few young interesting players to, you know, play, and some of the players that will probably leave, but that will definitely leave at the end of the season, some that will probably leave at the end of the season and all that. So we'll get to, you know, to see more of a mixed lineup and some younger players getting more chances and a lot. And then you have Ceballos starting, and then you have Willian starting, and I was just, okay, why? I mean, I get it that there might be some, you know, background issues, like situations with the reserve team and all of that. But I mean, I really hope that he doesn't play Ceballos anymore, because he's definitely leaving at the end of the season. And just, you know, returning to that comment that we need to buy players for the next season and for beyond Arteta if he does leave at some point in early next season. You do the same with the players now. You have four matches against really mixed opponents, both strong and weaker ones. And you have a chance to see what you can do, what kind of different tactics and formations and lineups you can play. And then you go, yeah, okay, let's do this. Let's try give Willian a bit more chances. Let's go with Ceballos, who is leaving in 2 weeks. I mean, I was just really frustrated with that. And
you weren't alone. You weren't alone. Like, I can defend him. I say defend. I can understand why most of the decisions were made. I mean, the fact that the Arsenal under-23s had to get at least a point against West Ham to make sure they weren't being relegated meant that Miguel Aziz and Florent Balogun had to play. Mm-hmm. And the first thing you should say is, well, how in God's name are Arsenal's under-23s about to be relegated? And that's a damn good question. Two, if you're going to be playing Saka at left-back, you can't play Reece Nelson or Pepe at left-wing. You can't, because that it's just asking for disaster. You know, like, that is a defensive nightmare to have.
Even against West Brom.
Even against West Brom. Well, I mean, you know, Matheus Pereira was playing left mid and he was on the right wing. And when Callum Chambers wandered up one side, he got the ball, went through our midfield and scored. Like, it's, you need some sort of defensive stability and on both wings. And Willian is our best defensive winger. Is he good? Completely different question. But if you are going to be playing Saka at left back, then you need someone at least capable of running back, and Willian, for all his faults, has always been good at that. So there's that. Ceballos, again, Miguel Aziz would have been at least in the squad, but apart from that, we don't have any other centre midfielders. Like, the other problems that come up aren't down to the under-23, it's just down to poor squad building. Like having four centre midfielders, and then say, oh, well, we've got two youngsters, and then not playing the two youngsters at all, to the point where Joe Willock and Ainsley Maitland-Niles have to go out on loan to get games. and then Joe Willock almost getting, you know, maybe getting England consideration because of how well he was playing for Newcastle. And Newcastle going, yeah, can we have him? Please, please, can we have him? We'd really like to buy him. And West Brom seemingly doing the same with Maitland-Niles. Like, both of them would have been far more suitable candidates for a game than Danny Ceballos. And at your left wing, yeah, if Saka hadn't had to be forced to play left back because we only have one left back at the club, then yeah, Reece Nelson could have played left wing. Like, it's squad building like that. And that's not on Arteta. Well, some of it is because now he's manager and not head coach, but a lot of that is on the man above him, which is Edu, where it's, you should have brought in another left back. That way, Granit Xhaka wouldn't have to be playing left back at all. And he could have been left with Partey, and you could have helped build that partnership for a month, and Partey could have sauntered forward. Yep. Like, it's little thing, it's details like that that separate first from ninth. It's, yeah, you know, and...
And it's not being unlucky with injury that Tierney got injured or something like that. It's the fact that, as you said, you didn't have a cover for yeah, Tierney at all. You have to have something like that. You have Cedric and Bellerin on the right, and Chambers who can play there, and nothing like that on the left.
Yeah. And look, Cedric playing on the left, and oh, he's all right, and then gets absolutely ripped in the next game. You're like, oh, yeah, we need a left footer playing a left back. And just not having played Granit Xhaka at left back. Like, that, that's all that needs to be said. You know, that Arsenal's plan to win a semi-final and a whole month of training based to win a semi-final was predicated on Granit Xhaka playing left back. Like, if Unai Emery had said that, he'd be fired on the spot.
Oh, for sure.
On the spot. And so Arteta and Edu and everyone else at the club have a lot of work ahead of them.
Yeah.
On, you know, rebuilding the squad, getting rid, like, they have to be ruthless, like, completely ruthless with this. They
non-negotiables.
Yeah.
What are those, I wonder? What,
now, Arteta is approaching Wenger status on bullshitting the media.
Oh, can I just, I was really upset with the comments after the match against West Brom. I was reading them this morning, and Lee pointed them out on Daily Can on Twitter as well. And there were some mixed reactions, and the comments about comparing Emil Smith-Rowe and Willian, who both had their first Premier League goal so late in the season against a relegated side and all of that, and both being midfielders and all that. And Arteta went to say that Smith-Rowe had definitely had a really fantastic season, and he's pleased for his goal, etc., etc. But he adds, but he is a midfielder and he has to have 10-15 goals per season. It's not enough, this one goal. And then goes right next sentence, next comment. Oh, Willian, he finally scored his goal. He did so well in previous season for other clubs. He can still do it, and he just needed some time. I'm paraphrasing, basically. But, I mean, that was just... I just read it as, like, yeah, you and Emil are trying the whole season, basically, for one of our best players since January, basically, if not the best, I mean, with Saka and Xhaka. Those three are top for me at the moment. And you finally scored a goal, and it was a really brilliant goal. Nice thinking, nice situation, using the situation and all of that. But, I mean, you should have scored 10 more.
He sounds like your mother-in-law.
It's just...
seriously.
Do you really want to say that to the young player after he scored his first Premier League goal for your club?
He sounds like...
Yeah, I totally understand. Yeah.
Yeah, he sounds like a mother-in-law who's disappointed in... He's disappointed in the choices that her son made. Yeah, anything her son does is the height of acceptance and the pinnacle of everything, even though he's probably a deadbeat himself. But that's what this is. He clearly thinks that Smith Rowe needs to improve, but Willian is the best of the best. And then, like you said, you look at the two of them and you're going, like, it's the Spider-Man meme, but and it's like, but they've done the same. Yeah.
He added the part that we have to, you know, be careful with rising expectations and expecting more from Smith Rowe. And, you know, like he has been with talking about the youngsters whole season, that they have to be paced and not overplayed and all that, which is all really great. But it's like a bit contradictory when you say you expect him to score 10, 15 goals from his based on the position he is playing. Although he's not always playing the same position because tactics change and lineups change and all that. And then you go, we have to be realistic and, you know, lower expectations and all that. It's just, and tap on the back for Willian, who has done absolutely nothing the whole season and scored now the really decent goal, free kick, really nice, no problem there at all. But I was just, you know, reading it and listening to it from someone, you know, I often struggle with self-esteem and all and that, you know, in life in general. I was just thinking, if I was Smith Rowe and read something like that, that's what I would think. I would be, yeah, I'm not good enough. I just, this is well done for scoring a goal in such an important match after being probably the best player in the Villarreal match.
Yeah. And when he says, I have to quote here, you know, says a lot of terms in where we are. He's having an incredible season ever since he started to play in December, but he's scoring his first Premier League goal. An incredible season for number 10 of Arsenal means he needs to score 15 goals to give 10 assists, right? So, let's see. Smith Rowe, in around the same age as this player here. This player here is scored in the last 11 seasons. Is it 11? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. So, he scored 10 goals in 2012-13, he scored 10 goals. 2013-14, he scored 3 goals. 14-15, he scored 16 goals. 2016, he scored 16 goals. 2017, 7 goals. 2018, 12 goals. 2019, 6 goals. 2020, 16 goals. And this season, 9 goals. And he plays as a number 10. That's Kevin De Bruyne. Where is he getting 15 out of? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, he said, oh, well, you have to get 15 and 10. He's not Kevin De Bruyne. Like,
it's his first season.
Yeah. Half season. And yet then, like you said, then Willian.
He wouldn't even play him if he was out of ideas in January.
Yeah. And then Willian. Willian has done it in the past. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
Past. Oh, 37 games. One goal. He's done it for many years and has achieved everything in the game. Somehow this season, we haven't managed to get the best out of him.
That's true.
He had some spells where we could see highlights of things he could do. Yes, they're called BBC One and it's called Match of the Day. And today was a good example of that.
Like Arteta. Like his plan, his tactics, his arsenal. We have seen highlights of that during, you know, 5 minutes. I mean, we played well against West Brom for 10 minutes in the second half, which looked, you know, really great.
Arsenal's two best performances attacking this season have come against West Brom and West Brom.
We find our level.
Well, maybe we have. Like, but like you said, it's to assume that it's assuming that the work is on Smith Rowe's shoulders to do. That it's up to Smith Rowe to unlock it. And I think what we're saying is that you need to help him. You need to put him in better positions. You need to get him in more goal scoring positions. You need to come up with a system that helps him. And because if you do, you will get more out of him. It is not up to him to prove you right. And you need to work together on this.
That's what Pep said. I think that you mentioned it in your video for Villarreal match, I think, that Pep has that saying that his job is to get the ball
up to the final third. And then it's up to the players from there. Yep. Arteta looks like he's trying to walk the ball in himself.
Mm.
And you can't play like that. You cannot control footballers like that. They're very well compensated and they're multimillionaires. But these players, like right at the top again, are artists. They're geniuses. You know, some of the things they can do with a football, we don't even comprehend they can do.
Mm.
And if And look, if you need a reminder of that, today is Dennis Bergkamp's birthday. Go look at the 25 different clips that everyone is posting of all his goals, and none of them have the same two goals in it. Like no one had ever seen a goal like the Newcastle goal before. Yeah. To the extent that many people still think it's a fluke. Like, it's one of those situations where you've got to trust these players. You've got to give them some amount of self-imparted control over what they can do. You've got to let them see the picture for themselves. Again, Cesc Fabregas would not have been anywhere near the player he was if he had played at Barcelona and stayed there, because he would have been limited. They would have turned him into Xavi. Now, Xavi was brilliant, but Cesc for Arsenal, Cesc played 20 yards further up the pitch, and look at him. Mm-hmm. Like, and then he goes to Barcelona. They end up having to play him as a false nine because they thought he was going to be Xavi, and it turns out he's not. And he gets there, he fits in a bit. He comes back to England and immediately wins the league for Chelsea almost by himself again. Like, it's players like that that we think Smith Rowe might be, that Saka might be, that they have the ability to see the whole field and impact it. And by putting such a limiting tactical plan upon their shoulders, you limit the growth, you limit the ceiling of what this team can turn into. And if Arteta can't see that, he needs to be fired. And we're going to see over the summer, once he has a proper pre-season and a proper training camp, we're going to see very quickly in, you know, August, September, like we did at the start of Unai Emery. The first thing he did was make the goalkeepers, you know, pass it to the centre-backs out wide. And everyone went, oh, we never done that under Wenger. Oh, let's see how this works. Now, it was miserable, but it was new. And what Arteta has to come up with is something that gets more I'm not going to go Martin Tyler and go, it's the Croydon De Bruyne, like, Christ. But that's what Arteta needs to do. He needs to do a much better job getting the best out of the players he has. And instead of sticking to the tactical plan that he knows that works, he's got to come up with something that's a better fit for the players that he has. Because if he doesn't, he will lose games and he will lose his job.
Yeah, and I'm really worried that that's something that comes with experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what worries me the most.
And the next experience he's going to get is Chelsea on Wednesday night. I know I'm Mr. Pessimism on this podcast and in general, basically, but I honestly think Chelsea could give them a hiding. And here's why. Arsenal's strength is when they get the ball from the back and hit it out to the wings and then push it back into the centre, right? Mm-hmm. Chelsea's strength is catching you out on the wings with the ball. That's what they do. They force you out wide and then Kante goes, gets the ball and they're gone. So does Mason Mount. So does Kai Havertz. They're brilliant at it. Like, Tuchel has them in such little time, has them so skilled at almost isolating them by themselves and then going, right, pass it through us, I dare you. And they can't.
Same players that struggled under Lampard.
Yeah, which just shows you, that Chelsea team could win the league if it had any way decent coaching from August instead of January. It's such a good team with such good players. And you look at Mason Mount, who most of us were mocking, was saying, oh, he's Frank Lampard's your pet pupil, that he's the teacher's pet. Now look at him. Mm-hmm. Now you're looking at me going, oh, Jesus Christ, there's some player. Like, it's, can he put in a system like that, that gets the best out of a Kante, a Mount, a Havertz, maybe even a Werner? Although I did see someone revert to Timo Werner, was it Jasmine Babber on Twitter? Someone said that they're a Gervinho with more assists. And I thought, yeah, that's actually not bad. But that's what Arteta needs to do now. He needs to come up with a plan that works, that fits the players that he has, or whatever players that are brought in, and stop trying to fit all these square pegs into round holes, because the league table doesn't lie. We're shit right now. And if he can't fix it, he needs to go. Any other tidbits, any little bits of enthusiasm, any positive notes you might want to?
I think that under Arteta, we did look okay against teams like Chelsea, United, and all that. I mean, they did exploit some of our bad sides and all of that. But I'm not that pessimistic. But maybe because I stopped caring. I mean, it's really not important match at all.
It's Chelsea away, Palace away, and Brighton at home. Those are your last three games of the season.
I think we can win all of them.
And on that very obviously drug-riddled prediction, we will talk to you next week. Like I said, hopefully Matthew Wade will be here. No, you know, I can't promise. It's obviously it's totally up to him and where he is with the child. We wish him all the best. And yeah, if he makes it, happy days. If not, you'll be stuck with my dulcet Irish brogue for another week, unfortunately. But it's goodbye from Anita.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We will talk to you next week, listener. Good luck.